I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the eyes of the nation are likely to be on Portland again this weekend, but I want to encourage people not to overlook the true tragedy unfolding in that city. Plus, voters are reporting issues to us ahead of the November election, including double ballots we'll discuss, and a socialist state lawmaker fined for blocking conservatives he doesn't like on X. That and much more, including me. Coming up today on Undivided, remember you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com, and click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz, final live show of the week. I think it's going to be a very active weekend in Portland. Of course, there was last weekend was pretty bad in Portland, but with all of the concern over the National Guard and the hand-wringing and all of that, we also know that on Saturday, there's already a demonstration that's being planned. This flyer is going around, say no to the National Guard in Portland. Trump out, troops out, ICE out, rally and march to the ICE facility. And it's being put on by the who's who of the far left, like the Portland for Palestine group. Weird. What does Portland for Palestine have to do with getting the National Guard and ICE out of the city of Portland? I don't know. But I bring this up for a couple reasons. So part of it is going to be evident in our episode of Sundays with Subscribers this week. Like, look, I think that the situation on the ground in Portland continues to be absolutely ridiculous. As I had mentioned last weekend, our friend Katie Davis Court was down there, and it really did, as much as I have said that it doesn't necessarily look like a war zone down there. Nicole, can you play this video? The video absolutely from last weekend 100% looked like a war zone down there. And I don't know if it's going to be the same this week, but there were arrests made. The FBI has made it clear that they are going to try to target, you know, the funders of Antifa and all of that. And so I think there's a lot of reasons to pay attention to what's happening outside the ICE facility. But I don't want in all of this, and one of the things that I hope, because there's been this conflation of issues happening in Portland. And I think the conflation is happening from the Trump administration, and the conflation is happening certainly from Democrats in Oregon. You know, they've said a million times, oh, we don't need the Trump administration here. Oregon is safe and wonderful and nothing at all is wrong. And that's just, as I said, not true. And I think one of the biggest tragedies of this back and forth about what's happening in Portland and whether the feds need to get involved is the fact that there is a real ongoing war zone in Portland. And it's what's happening 2 miles from the ICE facility downtown. It is the death that has become frequent and regular in Portland. It is the filth and squalor. A friend, Kevin Dahlgren, posted these two videos recently, one of them showing a guy passed out on a bus, pants down, covered in feces. I mean, absolutely insane. The other one, three people nodding off on fentanyl. And I'm glad that people like Kevin are continuing to shine a light on really the biggest crisis that Portland is facing. And it's very similar to the crises that Seattle and other West Coast cities are facing as well, because while there's so much focus on what's happening at the ICE facility, I don't want the focus to go away from what's been happening for years and years and years in these West Coast cities and what inarguably is probably the biggest crisis. In fact, Caroline Leavitt, the White House press secretary, was sharing some of Kevin's videos this week and said, highly recommend following independent journalist Kevin Dahlgren, who's reporting on the ground in Portland, really showcases the horrors taking place in the city every day. Portland clearly needs help. It's a shame their Democrat elected officials are resisting it simply because it's being offered by President Trump. But again, there, I do think she's conflating a couple issues. There's a difference between the National Guard being sent in to help with the situation outside the ICE facility and to protect federal agents and assets. And then there's a separate issue that both sides are tending to conflate. And I don't think anyone, including the White House, has suggested that the Trump administration is going to be sending troops in to help with the situation, the homeless and the drug crisis and all of that in downtown Portland. Now, I would argue that the city of Portland should accept the help. if the president literally would say, hey, we can send federal resources to downtown Portland to help with the homeless crisis and the drug crisis, hell, even some DEA, ATF agents to go in there and arrest drug traffickers or whatever it is, the city of Portland absolutely should accept that help. And so in the interest of all this information out there about what's and all this coverage about what's happening at the ICE facility, this week on Sundays with Subscribers, we are going to focus on what's happening 2 miles away from the ICE facility and the real despair and what businesses are going through, because I think that they're hoping that they can get some attention during all of this toward how bad the conditions are in Portland and how they desperately need Democratic leadership to stop fear-mongering over Donald Trump and to start focusing on the crises there. So on Sundays with Subscribers, we have two guests, both of them Portland business owners who've been trying to scream to high heaven about, yes, the very real issues that exist in Portland and the fact that, no, Portland isn't safe and wonderful and everything is fine. So the first business owner we're going to feature, her name is Karen. She owns Stadium Superette. It's a convenience store near the stadium there. And, you know, one of the first things I wanted to talk to her about is just what she has to say about all of this national attention that's focused on the city of Portland. A lot of focus on Portland right now. What would you want people who aren't from there to know about Portland?
Portland is and or was beautiful, and it's a great place to live. We are just dealing with a lot of crime and livability issues that it just seems like the city and the county are a little overwhelmed and or not focusing on the things that need to be taken care of. I think we can get there, but I think it's just going to take all of us to pitch in and make sure that that our city is the way it used to be, you know, where people can walk around and not have to step over needles or a tent or a homeless person, you know, or deal with crime, you know, going into a business, you know. And so I've lived here all my life, and so I do know what it's been like, and like I said, and what it can be.
Yeah, it's just crazy. She was telling me they have a tracking system, you know, where it's basically a binder and they keep track of all the instances where there's been crime or shoplifting or where they've had to call the police. In the course of a year, there's been like 230 instances, not even a year, from November of last year to now, 235 instances that they've had to deal with at one convenience store in the city of Portland. And the theme is consistent for all these Portland business owners we've been speaking to, again, two of which you'll hear from on Sundays with Subscribers, that they're livid that the mayor of governor of Oregon, that the mayor of Portland, just because they're trying to prove a point about Donald Trump, is out there denying the reality of what the city of Portland is dealing with. The second business owner who you'll hear from on this Sunday show, her name is Loretta. She owns Bison Coffee House, which sells like Native American made coffee. And her story is just tragic. So not only has she had the same thing dealing with crime and disorder on top of all the insane taxation, but her nephew was murdered in cold blood in front of her house, and they've never identified a suspect.
Well, I have been testifying like a lot, just because, you know, we're suffering, our businesses are suffering, and it's like a lot is falling on us that we're trying to figure things out. We can't get help. And my nephew was killed outside of our house.
Wow. Do you know why? Do you know the motive or anything?
No. And you don't hear from detectives. You don't hear anything from anybody. It's just like nothing. And I've been testifying. I testified last year, early in 2024, in front of Multnomah County, that we made it in the top 10 most dangerous cities. We're known as the Murder City. And then in October, late October, which was this year, will be a year that my nephew was killed. And, you know, and I testified, we made that. You know, so I say, I believe it. People always, you know, they're like, oh, what proof do you have? Okay, well, you know what? When your kid is shot and killed in front of your house or your wife or your husband or something, then we'll see how you feel, you know? But it's like, we're having to deal with these things, and there's no accountability. There's like nothing. You know, during when I heard the gunshots and I jumped out of bed and I looked out the window, next thing his girlfriend's pounding on my front door, and you know, me and her were running, and I'm like, did you call 911? And she was like, because she was pounding on my door that my nephew been shot. She was, you know, freaking out. And I just felt like I was in the worst nightmare of my life. And I ran trying to get to him too. And we couldn't get to him in time. I mean, we called 911. I called 911 and I got a recording, you know, in a life and death situation. I got a recording. So you cannot tell me everything is okay. It's not okay. It's not okay here.
Yeah, and you can sense the frustration of these Portland business owners. And it's not even like about politics or anything. They're sitting here. They're dealing with, one of them brought her nephew, who'd just been shot, to the hospital and watched him die in front of her. Her business has been targeted by Antifa because she dared to host Coffee with a Cop in 2022. Dealing with crime, all these insurance claims, the other business owner, $235 in a year. And then they turn on the news and they watch the governor of Oregon and the mayor of Portland say, oh, Portland's a safe city. Nothing is happening here. Can you imagine how offensive that is? So yes, there's going to be a lot of attention on Portland this weekend, you know, especially if the National Guard is going to show up for what's happening outside the ICE facility. But there is an absolute years-long tragedy and yes, war zone unfolding in Portland. It needs attention. And so we're going to try to also focus on that as well. And the same in Seattle, the same thing going on here as well. So on Sundays with Subscribers, if you want to watch those interviews with Loretta Guzman and Karen Chire, they are going to be joining us, talking about their experience, their real life experience as Portland residents, as business owners in Portland, and how offensive it is to them to hear Democratic leaders paint Portland as a safe, peaceful city. Absolutely unreal. So undividedpod.com if you want to sign up to become a subscriber and catch our Sunday with Subscriber episodes. All right, I want to talk about ballot issues quickly. So let me preface this with not accusing anyone of perpetrating fraud, but we continue to get emails from voters who are concerned about some letters they've been getting in the mail. Some of them have been getting two ballots. And it's very important that you bring those things to our attention, because as much as I don't buy into the narrative that we have stolen elections and all of that, when there are clear instances that present opportunities for fraud in elections, we need to take them seriously. We need to talk about them, and we need to alert officials to them and get to the bottom of what exactly is going on. So first, one thing I just want to get out of the way, because I had a couple people messaging us, emailing us, saying that they got a letter from King County Elections that they were going to get a second ballot in the mail. And to discard their first ballot, or if you've already sent your first ballot in, to fill out the second ballot. So a lot of people said, this seems fishy. It doesn't seem authentic. It is authentic. So if you, it's only for 1,780 voters in King County Fire Protection District number 47. So this is Southeast King County. So if you're in Southeast King County and you got a letter from King County Elections that said, hey, we have to send you another ballot, it's authentic. You'll get another ballot in the mail. The reason it's happening is because they left off a fire district ballot measure. Some lines got crossed. It wasn't on the first ballot. So they told us in a statement a couple minutes ago, they consulted, we just got the statement from them, consulted with the prosecuting attorney's office, decided the best solution was to get ballots with the measure included back out to voters as quickly as possible. They were mailed yesterday. They should begin to arrive in your mailboxes today and tomorrow. So what you do is, if you've already submitted a ballot, you submit your second ballot and they'll only count one of them. They'll only count the second ballot. That's what they tell us. If you haven't submitted your first ballot, you can just recycle it, discard it, shred it, whatever you want to do, and fill out your second ballot. So I do want to get that issue out of the way. It is authentic. It's not a scam. It only affects like 2,000 people in Southeast King County. Now, to something I have quite a few questions about. Multiple people have been emailing us saying, and that are not in this fire protection district, so it has nothing to do with that, that they're getting two ballots. And there's often some discrepancy between the how their name is written on both of the ballots. And we've heard enough of this that we've reached out to the Secretary of State's office to get some information. So it seems like in these two cases, there's kind of two different issues going on here, but they're equally concerning. So I had to black out all the person's information for obvious reasons in the barcode. But in this first instance, a woman told us she got two ballots in the mail. One had her maiden name and one had her married name. And that's concerning because it's not unusual for people to, you know, get married or change their name. And surely there should be some sort of kind of protection against double ballots being sent to them. If something like this has happened to you, please let us know. We're aware of this. We've sent it to the Secretary of State's office and to King County Elections. And this one is even weirder to me. So this is in Pierce County. We were given images of two ballots that one individual got in the mail. Now, the ballot said that one of them was a replacement ballot, which they said was weird because they hadn't requested a replacement ballot. They're not in that one fire district that they know about, when that we know about, that would have been getting a second ballot. And beyond that, I know I can't show it here because they don't want their name out there. Their name is written different on both of the ballots. So let's say there was some legitimate reason to send them a replacement. Their name doesn't appear the same on the second ballot as the first ballot. The first ballot is their first name, middle initial, last name. The second ballot that says replacement on it is their first name, full middle name, last name. Make that make sense. That doesn't make any sense to me, because even if it was a replacement ballot, you'd think they would have the name in the exact same way that they're registered as a voter sent out in the replacement ballot. So here's why I'm showing both of these to you today, is I want you to let us know, because we're trying to figure out, is this a larger issue? Because this is two different counties, King County, Pierce County, similar sort of issue. And obviously it's not fraud in the sense that it's not fraud until you fill it out and send it in. But it's an opportunity for fraud. And that's an issue. So let's say that these two individuals were not honest people and they decided, oh, I got two ballots, I'm going to send them both in. Now, if the county were to realize or find out, then they could be charged and convicted of a felony. But still, you want to limit opportunities for fraud. And the fact that our show has at least two viewers in the last day that have received double ballots, I think that that's concerning, that it might be a larger issue. We also got this letter, and this goes into, I think it feeds the conspiracy about dead people are voting, right? Oh my gosh, well, dead people aren't voting, but people are voting for dead people. So a viewer received this postcard and sent it to us in the mail. Again, we're blocking out pertinent information. The postcard says, you may be eligible to vote. It says it's from the Washington Secretary of State's Elections Division. Our records show you are not registered as a Washington State voter. To vote in the next election, eligible residents may register online or by mail, blah, blah, blah. It gives you information. You're eligible because you're 18 years old or more. You're a U.S. citizen. Blah, blah, blah. The problem is that this particular postcard that was sent to one of our viewers was addressed to the previous homeowner. Okay, maybe not a big deal. Maybe they just moved. Well, the previous homeowner is dead. They're deceased. They're dead. So why are they getting from the Secretary of State's office? And they didn't just die. So why are they getting from the Secretary of State? And I'm sorry, I don't mean to be cold and callous. They have passed away. Thank you, Nicole. Why are they getting from the Secretary of State's office something encouraging them to become a registered voter? So how widespread is that? And what does that mean? And are the voter rolls really being cleaned? So anything you see that's weird or suspicious, we want to get to the bottom of it. We want to reach out to elected leaders, to the Secretary of State's office, see if there's any reasonable explanations for it. And then all of those are opportunities to be able to improve voter integrity. And I do think Secretary of State Steve Hobbs, if we bring to him instances that are of concern, I do think that his office will take it seriously and will make sure that they investigate these instances and prevent them from happening in the future. So it's very, very important that if you got something like this, I think it would have been easy for this viewer just to toss it. Like, this isn't even addressed to me, so just to recycle it. But they're like, whoa, this is addressed to the person who lived here before me and they're deceased. So they let us know about it. So I do appreciate that. And while I'm on the subject, please fill your ballots out. Please make sure you get your ballots in. This weekend is a grand time to do it. I know you have a week and a half or so to be able to fill them out. But for the sake of the campaigns of candidates you support, it's a really good thing to get them in early, especially if you have no question about who you're voting for, because then they're not going to focus any time or resources knocking on your door, calling you, because you already got your ballot in and they'll know it. So just get all of that off your back. Make the flyers stop coming to your door. Get your ballot in. Please, 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 ASAP. All right, coming up next, a socialist state lawmaker. Why can't the socialists follow the rules? Why do the socialists never follow the rules? A socialist state lawmaker is being fined by the PDC for blocking his enemies on X. Including me. That's coming up next. First, I had a great time this morning at the Engage conference at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. I was like, did that 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. Poor Nicole's getting the show ready all on her own. Raced back, sat down, was here for a couple minutes, and then we went live. So, but I had a fun time with my friend Jonathan Cho and Alex Hayes, and we talked to the crowd about how the media covers housing policy and homelessness and media strategy and all of that. I really enjoyed it. And we also enjoy having the Rental Housing Association as a sponsor of our show. I believe in everything that they're doing, their policy positions. I'm really proud to be partnered with them. And if you are a small to mid-sized landlord, RHA is really someone you want on your side to navigate this climate with rent control, all the new laws and regulations, and really, frankly, the vilification of landlords that happens in the media and by the Democratic Party. RHA is working every day to try to counter that and to try to share the stories of housing providers and how they aren't the enemy, they aren't evil, and they're just trying to, I don't know, some of them, you know, have maybe an income in retirement, provide housing to people, and they deserve to have their stories told as well. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org, become a member today. All right, Sean Scott, tisk, tisk, tisk. So, of course, socialist Sean Scott, who ran for a couple of offices in the city of Seattle, didn't win here. Then the city of Seattle decided to elect him as their state representative, as their representative in Olympia. Great. Despite the fact he supported police defunding, dismantling of police, he's a far left extremist. Just insane. I mean, the city of Seattle residents are just a glutton for punishment. But he doesn't think the rules apply to him. It's very clear. And our friend Ari Hoffman posted this. Love Ari Hoffman. So just as a background here, and do you have this of me being blocked? So Sean Scott would block people, conservatives who he didn't like. He would block them on X, like, nope, you can't follow, you know, just horrible. On both of his accounts, by the way. So his state account, and then he's got one called like Eye on the Storm or something that's a personal account. He'd block people there too. But as you know, you can't do that. You can't block your constituents on social media. So our friend Ari Hoffman was one of the people who was blocked. So what did Ari Hoffman do? Well, he wrote to the Legislative Ethics Board and he let them know, and I'm sorry, I think I said PDC. He wrote to the Legislative Ethics Board and filed a complaint. And it turns out that Sean Scott can't do this. So Ari said, Rep. Sean Scott, a member of the Democratic Socialists of America, has been fined $1,000 for social media violations by the Washington Legislative Ethics Board. Earlier this year, he was fined over $11,000 for campaign finance violations, including using money for haircuts. Scott will only have to pay $500 on this violation if he has no more violations. And as Ari alluded to there, this isn't the first time that Sean Scott has been fined for playing fast and loose with the rules. You'll recall that when he was campaigning for this position, he was getting haircuts and spending a lot of his campaign cash on haircuts. And people like had a problem with it at the time, but he basically said, I'm going to keep doing it until the PDC tells me not to. So because he's just like, I mean, he doesn't care about the optics. He's just so full of himself. And so he's like, until the PDC tells. And then the PDC said, yeah, man, you can't do that. Jesus's barbershop. Yeah, he was going to Jesus pretty regularly spending money on haircuts, which is that what a man's haircut costs these days? It might. $90.
You're a professional. $90? Mean, if we have to pay $300, they better be paying.
First of all, my haircuts do not cost $300. My hair colors do.
Yes.
But my cut is like $105.
Right.
Yeah. And look at these locks. You're telling me my haircut costs the same as Jesus's barbershop for Sean Scott? So anyway, he was fined by the PDC. He basically dared the PDC to fine him for getting haircuts. He basically dared them, right? And then did. And he's like, okay, I guess I'll stop it now, because apparently he has to be told not to do something that's clearly wrong. And then he's once it became clear and people were calling him out for blocking individuals on social media, like Ari and me, he very quickly went and unblocked us. And it's like, nah, too late. And so I'm glad that Ari took it a step further and went to the Legislative Ethics Board and said, hey, I don't think he can do that. And it has nothing to do with blocking the media or a regular citizen. They can't block a regular citizen either. And there might be some rules in there for if there's like threats or something like that. But yeah, he just doesn't want to hear any dissent. And he wants to be able to spend campaign cash on haircuts. And I'm glad that he's being held accountable for both of those things. It's always the socialist, too.
Of course.
You know what I thought about yesterday? So we have the Seattle mayoral race, and it was revealed that Katie Wilson, this like 43-year-old white woman who's a socialist is a nepotism baby. She's a nepo baby. Like, her parents are academics from New York. She couldn't even say for sure how much money her parents sent her. They paid for her to go to Oxford, only for her to drop out 6 weeks before graduation. And it, you know, in my segment yesterday, I almost painted that as like, and she's convinced like the socialist, this is the person who's a socialist, like Mom Donnie in New York, and they've never struggled a day in their life. They've never had a real job. But then it occurred to me that actually makes a lot of sense, because they're used to getting things handed to them. Mm-hmm. They're used to getting things for free. They like it. They like having no responsibility and having other people pay for their lifestyle, like Sean Scott. Other people can pay for my haircuts because I need to look good for the campaign trail. That's literally what he said, because I need to look good for the campaign trail. And he might say, well, a socialist shouldn't be so, what's the word I'm looking for? So materialistic or whatever it is. It's like, no, they're used to getting things for free. They love it. And so, of course, they're socialists. And of course, they're going to advocate for other people to get things for free, you know, on the backs of other individuals. Katie Wilson has been living off her parents' teat for years, for decades. So why not advocate to live off, for other people to live off the taxpayer teat? It's been worked out very well for her. Her husband doesn't even have a job. He wants to start a home bakery, but he's put those dreams off for a little while. And why would he need to start a home bakery or have a job when his in-laws are paying the bills for everything? He doesn't have a job, and the in-laws pay for childcare, so he can't even be bothered to watch their own child. So it actually makes perfect sense, and my mindset totally flipped on that. Makes perfect sense that Mandani is a socialist. Makes perfect sense that Katie Wilson is a socialist. Makes perfect sense that Sean Scott is a socialist, because they want the freebies, they love the freebies, and they want everyone else to share in the freebies as well. Losers. All right, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable, which is a nutty story. This should be a national story. It really is government taking, in my opinion. It should be illegal. We'll talk about it coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones is the guy to call if you're thinking about selling your home and moving to somewhere more sane or sunny. Sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Wes and his team have been in this market for a long time. They know it like the back of their hands, and they can give you, you know, you might go to some national website to try to get an estimate of what your house is worth or whatever it is, but you're not going to be able to get the kind of institutional market of the, or knowledge of this market from one of those national sites. Someone like Wes, who's been working here for, you know, more than a decade, has been through the ups and downs of the market. He's going to be able to give you that neighborhood level analysis of what's happening in the housing market that I think can be really beneficial. So the first thing you should do, go to sellwithwes.com and just use their free home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. And then you can go from there. Ask Wes, say, hey, I want a market analysis. Can you tell me what's going on with the housing market in my neighborhood? And he'll be like, sure, I'll do that for you for free. And then if you decide to move forward, you can go from there. He can talk to you about things like their listing boost concierge service, which will make sure that your home is properly prepared for sale, which is a big deal in the market right now. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. So the city of Seattle essentially created conditions where a grocery store in North Seattle had to go out of business, creating essentially a food desert. The city of Seattle creates those conditions. So private enterprise has to go out of business. And now the city of Seattle wants to step in and improve conditions so they can provide groceries directly to the public. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Okay, so there's a little bit of background here that you need to understand as we move forward. So there was this controversial proposed merger between Kroger and Albertsons, and it was blocked by a court in December of 2024. And, you know, whenever there's like all these big mergers, people think they're not going to be served as well, and there's all these concerns about it. But also, blocking the merger didn't serve people very well either. For instance, this is an article from KNKX, and it was written September 25th of this year, so just about a month ago. North Seattle neighborhood braces for closure of main grocery store. So this is a Fred Meyer. A Fred Meyer grocery store, which sits on a busy street in Seattle's Lake City neighborhood, serves as the area's primary grocery store and pharmacy. Now, residents are preparing for it to close in October. The loss of the store will reverberate across the community, forcing locals to travel more than a mile to the next closest full-service supermarket, which has amenities like a bakery. Some community advocates are raising the alarm that shuttering the Lake City store will transform the area into a food desert. Along with the Fred Meyer in Lake City, the store's parent company, Kroger, is closing at least four other stores in the Puget Sound region, including in Tacoma and Everett. This follows a failed merger attempt last year between Kroger and Albertsons, under which the company planned to sell off stores. Quote from a company spokesperson, due to a steady rise in theft and a challenging regulatory environment that adds significant costs, we can no longer make these stores financially viable. Now, this is an obvious outcome of progressive policies. This is the kind of stuff that we've been screaming from the rooftops. Remember on the show last week, we gave multiple examples of policies, what we warned the outcome would be, and what the outcome swiftly was. And this is another one of those things. You have supermarkets that are very low margin businesses. They can't afford additional unexpected expenses. So you go in there and Shama Sawant wants to throw out a number that sounds nice. Oh, $15 an hour minimum wage. Well, hell, why not make it $20, $30 an hour minimum wage? And they talk about how that will benefit workers. It'll be great for workers. But as we know, and as the studies have now shown, when you hike up the minimum wage, especially by multiple dollars at a time, not only does it not help workers, stores are forced to close. That's what happened in California when they hiked the minimum wage for fast food employees. Well, a bunch of people ended up out of a job and fast food restaurants closed. So when you hike the minimum wage, that's the implication of it. And then they mentioned some of the other, you know, regulatory things and crime. I mean, they have to put freaking deodorant behind plexiglass. These grocery stores that have low margins in Lake City, certain stretches of Lake City are high crime areas, is they can't afford to continue to have that much theft. So then what do they have to do? Well, they have to pay for more security cameras. They have to pay for security guards. They have to come in and basically plexiglass the whole place. And it's absurd. And they said, we can't do it anymore. So the city of Seattle, with its failed policies, anti-business policies, pro-crime policies, they did this, right? They forced this Fred Meyer out of business. And then that will create, when they go out of business soon, that will create a food desert, which is an unfortunate thing. To like, if you're kind of a city dweller, going a mile to the grocery store when you could just go down the block previous, that is a problem. And I'm not acting like it isn't. But it's the city that created the conditions that made the food desert. So now what is the city doing? Well, the city is saying, oh, well, we'll step in and we'll provide a grocery store where Fred Meyer could not. So this is from Mayor Bruce Harrell. And what I also find is funny about this, and a lot of this is probably election related. This neighborhood and Fred Meyer and Kroger, they were like begging the city. This was not a secret that they were on the verge of closure. This was not a secret that they were having issues with crime. This was not a secret that some of the wage policies and regulatory policies were making it hard for this business to stay open. So Mayor Bruce Harrell knew it was heading toward closure. What did he do about it? Not jack shit. Didn't care. But now, oh my gosh, now that, you know, people are going to be living in a food desert and he's trying to win re-election, now he cares. So here's what he's planning to do. So he says they're going to look into taking this land via eminent domain and maybe instituting some government-run food stores or farmers markets. Wow, that'll work. This is just such a grand idea. So in his directive, it's an executive order, quote, supporting food access. I direct the city to explore the acquisition of, by negotiation or eminent domain, the property situated at 13,000 Lake City Way Northeast, which presently houses a Fred Meyer store. This effort should include identifying the procedural requirements for using eminent domain, developing a plan for potential future uses of the property, including but not limited to a grocery store operated by a third party, a year-round farmer's market, other food and pharmacy access, restaurants, childcare, housing, and, as appropriate, engaging in direct negotiations with current and potential future property owners or partners. It says, for each location identified as a current or potential future food desert, I direct the above-referenced city departments to identify whether the city can play a role in stabilizing an existing grocery store or helping to acquire properties in strategic locations that may support a grocery store or pharmacy, and working with potential private sector partners to assess feasibility. In cases where site acquisition makes sense, the report should identify options for acquisition, including through the city exercising its eminent domain powers. You know what would have been a lot easier than any of that? Addressing the concerns that the existing grocery store had so they didn't have to close. Wow, what a concept. So now, because you didn't address what I argue would have been some easily addressed concerns, now you're going to spend, what, millions of dollars acquiring the property, potentially working with a third party to operate, what is it, a grocery store? Why would you think that a grocery store you help to operate or that you contract with a third party to operate in the exact same location, under the exact same regulatory environment, in the exact same crime climate, would have any more of a chance of surviving as Fred Meyer? Are you stupid? You actually have to be stupid to believe that. Not to mention if they're really going to consider, and farmers markets, because that'll replace the Fred Meyer. Oh, yes, we'll just have some carrots and some apples, and that'll totally replace the Fred Meyer. Again, I hate to be mean, but are you stupid? Are you actually stupid? And Democrats pushing back against the merger. Oh, we can't have that. That'll be bad. Well, is this any better? And it's all, I mean, they want government control of everything. So maybe it was by design. Maybe it's by design. Because the government wants control of everything. So why not have control of the food supply? Why not run the private food supply out, have a government food supply where you're going to spend seven taxpayer dollars on an apple and then sell that apple to people for 50 cents so it's a taxpayer subsidized apple? It's nuts. This goes on to say, I direct the Office of Intergovernmental Relations to include in the city's 2026 state legislative agenda the following priorities. Banning restrictive covenants and other restrictions that limit or prohibit a property from including a grocery store. Modifying the state business and occupation tax structure to provide relief to grocery stores. Oh, man, maybe, you know, when people were telling you, when they were raising taxes on businesses like this, putting new restrictions on businesses like this, when people said they're a low margin business, they won't be able to afford it, maybe you should have listened, but now you're going to go back and retroactively try to help them, which I'm not opposed to, but that doesn't mean you're off the hook for hurting them in the first place, and then offer other incentives for grocery stores to locate in key geographic areas. They didn't need incentives. They didn't need incentives. What they needed is for you to get out of the way. They didn't need incentives. What they needed is for government to perform its core functions adequately, like public safety. They didn't need incentives. What they needed is to have city officials who didn't advocate for police defunding, so 600 officers left the beat, and now there's no officers to respond to reports of shoplifting. There's no officers to patrol the area around Lake City. They didn't need incentives or special treatments or tax breaks. They just needed you not to ruin their business model proactively. This is a crazy story. Government forces grocery store to fail and close. Government steps in to buy the location with taxpayer funds to run a government grocery store. And for some reason, we think that's going to work out better. Part of me now wants Bruce Harrell to lose. I don't really mean that. I don't really mean that because I think the socialist would turn every grocery store into a government-run grocery store. But Bruce Harrell, I know you're a smart man. You have to be a smart man. You've gone through a lot of education in your life. This, out of all the things you've done, is one of the dumbest. And it makes no sense whatsoever. It's unbelievable. That's why it was in that segment. All right, coming up next, we have a lot of national news that I want to get to. First, our friends at Valentine Roofing are there to help you for really a variety of home projects. Obviously, first and foremost, if you need a roof repair or you need a new roof, reach out to them, get an estimate, 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. Schedule time for a free estimate. Or also, if you've got a leak or something, they'll come out and they'll do a free, you know, assessment, and then they'll repair it if they can. They're not going to push you into a new roof unless they think that you really, really need one. And then they also do other things too. If you need new siding, gutters, attic insulation, exterior cleaning, you can expect the same great, honest service and honest pricing. So schedule your free estimate by calling 206 Roofing. Again, call 206 Roofing. Please tell them you heard about them on Undivided. It is very important that you support the businesses that support our show. And they also are just a wonderful company that's been doing this work in the Northwest for a long time. So 206 Roofing, 206 Roofing. Okay. A little bit of national news. We've had a bunch of people reaching out to us asking us to cover this issue, and so I shall cover it. So you've probably heard that virtually the entire Pentagon press corps walked out last week, and it was because they were being asked essentially to sign some new rules of reporting, I guess you could call it. So there were a couple things in this. If news media require access to other areas or offices within the Pentagon for in-person interviews or other engagements, they must be escorted to and from those spaces by authorized DOW personnel. Previously, they'd been allowed to move freely throughout the building. They also sought the Defense Department to limit how much information personnel could share with reporters by requiring prior approval from officials. So it says the department remains committed to transparency to promote accountability and public trust. However, DOW, Department of War, information must be approved for public release by an appropriate authorizing official before it is released by any military member, DOW civilian employee, or contract employee, even if it is unclassified. So what the press corps essentially said, the Department of War, takes me a lot to get used to that, DOW, Department of War, was trying to do, it was trying to get Pentagon reporters to basically sign something saying they wouldn't solicit information that had not been approved for release, is sort of the easiest way I can explain that. And so now you've got this mass walkout, and I kind of thought the Department of War would relent, but they're like, nope, we're going to use this as an opportunity to create sort of a new Pentagon press corps. This from the Washington Post. Pentagon announces a new right-wing press corps after mass walkout. First of all, the Pentagon did not announce that they were going to have a right-wing press corps. Although, you know, they are, you know, the people who would sign it and who were willing to sign it are, you know, conservative and right-leaning and right-wing outlets. So in essence, it is creating a new press corps that will abide by those rules. It says a new crop of conservative media and influencers, including the Gateway Pundit, the Post-Millennial, Human Events, and the National Pulse, signed an agreement with the Defense Department. So it says the Defense Department's policy blocked journalists from soliciting information the department had not authorized for release, even unclassified details, a major shift in press outreach from the organization. So it goes in to talk about, you know, the new kind of Pentagon press corps. According to a draft of the announcement obtained by the Washington Post, the coalition of signatories included the cable news network Real America's Voice, streaming service Lindell TV, started by MyPillow CEO and Trump ally Mike Lindell, the websites The Gateway Pundit, The Post-Millennial, Human Events, The National Pulse, and Red State. It also includes Turning Point USA's media brand Frontlines, as well as influencer Tim Pool's Timcast, and a Substack-based newsletter called Washington Reporter. The memo said that many independent journalists also signed, but did not specify who they are. And this was what Sean Parnell, who's the assistant to the Secretary of War, actually put out. Today, the Department of War is announcing the next generation of Pentagon press corps. We are excited to announce over 60 journalists representing a broad spectrum of local new media outlets, spectrum of new media outlets and independent journalists have signed the Pentagon's media access policy and will be joining the new Pentagon press corps. 26 journalists across 18 outlets were among the former Pentagon press corps who chose to sign the new DOW media access policy. So they did say that some of the old, at least 26 journalists from the old press corps is going to be part of this next generation press corps that would sign it. New media outlets and independent journalists have created the formula to circumvent the lies of the mainstream media and get real news directly to the American people. Their reach and impact collectively are far more effective and balanced than the self-righteous media who chose to self-deport from the Pentagon. Americans have largely abandoned digesting their news through the lens of activists who masquerade as journalists in the mainstream media. We look forward to beginning a fresh relationship with members of the new Pentagon press corps. Okay, so let me just say for the record that if I were in that situation, I wouldn't have signed the new DOW rules. Based on what I read, based on what I know about them, part of the job of a reporter is soliciting information and hoping people give it to you. And that just has always been part of the job, and it's not the government's role. It's not appropriate for the government to say you cannot do that.
And if you do, you have to vacate the building. It's just not appropriate. It's the job of the Department of War to have a good handle on its people, to make sure that its people aren't leaking information to the media, whether it's classified or unclassified. And sometimes, frankly, you might not like this, but there is even classified information that is in the public's interest. You know, I'm not in favor of leaking classified information that could put people in danger, that could put our service members in danger, but sometimes there's information labeled classified that I do believe the public has a right to know. And so, in essence, what this would do is if you were a reporter at the Pentagon and you had a good source, you were well-sourced because you've been working there for 20 years as a journalist, and you obtained some information through a source, you would basically have been booted from the Pentagon for soliciting information that did not have prior approval from the Pentagon. So I do not agree with the outlets who decided to sign it, but that's certainly their prerogative. And even though I'm an independent outlet and I'm very favorable toward the president, I like the president of the United States, I would have probably been, unfortunately, one of the journalists who would have been booted from the Pentagon press corps. I can never celebrate or condone any sort of additional restrictions on the free press. We are supposed to be the watchdog of government. And yes, sometimes that includes soliciting information. I mean, think of all the stories, you know, I've broke in my career that involved soliciting information from sources that they were never supposed to provide to me. We have a wonderful exclusive coming up on Monday, and it was built on information from a whistleblower. And so to just say, oh, we don't want you to do that, and if you do that, you have to leave, it's interference in a free press. I don't like it. I don't support it. And I don't necessarily think it means that people are going to be better served by it. You know, when he talks about Americans have been largely abandoned digesting, or Americans have largely abandoned digesting their news through the lens of activists who masquerade as journalists. Let's not pretend that there aren't people in independent media who are activists who masquerade as journalists. Let's not pretend there aren't conservatives in independent media who masquerade as journalists. Now, I have a lot of qualms with legacy news, and I like the idea of adding balance and having new media voices and independent voices and even opinion voices that are part of the equation to balance it out and better serve Americans. But cutting out legacy media or people who've been covering the Pentagon for 20 years, I don't believe that less is better. I don't believe less is more. And so, I have a problem with this all around, but it is the prerogative of those journalists who decided to leave, and that doesn't mean they can't cover the Pentagon. It makes it a little more difficult. Maybe access isn't as readily available, but for the record, I would not personally have signed this. I have no reason to be offered to sign it. I don't cover the Pentagon, but I do think it's problematic. I'm not the biggest fan of it. Do you have a different opinion, Nicole? Do you agree with me?
No, I mean, a part of it, I think it said you can get some information, but if you do, then you're going to be on a list.
You're going to be in trouble. Can't put reporters on lists.
So deal with it when you get there.
No, I think it's a different thing. I do believe you have a responsibility as a journalist not to do no harm, because everything we do is going to hurt somebody's freaking feelings. But for instance, I would never use classified information that could put service members in jeopardy or whatever it is. Sure. You know, and I think most reporters, even if they're on the left, wouldn't do that. But so should there be a consequence if someone were to do that? Yeah, I do.
You're putting a lot there.
If you're using if you're in the Pentagon as a member of the press corps and you solicit information from a whistleblower and you, I don't know, put out the information of a U.S. military action ahead of time and you endanger the lives of service members, then yeah, I do think. But at the same time, Pete Hegseth included a reporter on a Signal chat, and that is true. He did do that. And I think the reporter didn't put out the information until after the strike, right? But the idea was had he been a bad reporter and chosen to endanger lives, he absolutely could have done that. And I wouldn't have had an issue with saying if he had done that, even though he came across the information sort of innocently, then yeah, like that guy, you gotta go, man, because you just endangered military troops. But anyway, I'm always gonna be for more press freedom, not less. Mm-hmm. This is less press freedom, and I think it's not good for Americans. All right, let's see here. I think I'm gonna skip this next story. Is that okay with you? We just have so much to get to still, okay. And I'm just running long. I'm ranting and raving about things. We'll save it for next week. Really quickly, there was another deadly semi-crash. This is relevant because we're gonna get to it in Florida Report. There was another deadly semi-crash, this one in Ontario. And it involved an illegal semi-truck driver. So it was an 8-vehicle collision in the video. God, that's so scary. When you really think about how, oh my gosh. And it's just insane. And when I first saw the video, I was like, how did he not try to stop? Well, he was under the influence of drugs. Yeah, was it alcohol or drugs? He was screwed up, right? His name is 21-year-old Jishan Preet Singh, an Indian national. He lived, want to guess? There's probably three options. Resident of California, in the country illegally, was apparently authorized to drive a big rig, entered the country by crossing the U.S.-Mexico border in 2022. He's now been charged with driving under the influence of drugs, causing bodily injury and gross vehicular manslaughter while intoxicated. So this is the second. I mean, there's been more stories than just two, but when you're talking about a major fatality, the Florida Turnpike crash that happened with, he was also an illegal Indian national, or he wasn't a full citizen. Actually. Yeah. I would say not related, but I have no idea if they're related or not. It's a very common last name in India. And that guy had authorization to drive from both Washington State and California. So this is clearly an issue, and it's just a common sense thing. It's like, first of all, there's a lot of jobs that someone in the country illegally, especially some guy who just crossed over the border, shouldn't be entrusted with, especially if you have a very clear language barrier. So as a result of the Florida Turnpike crash and the guy who was licensed to drive in both California and Washington State, the state of California, you might have heard, is suing both California and Washington State. I really do hope they win, because I certainly think they have grounds for a lawsuit. So that's one of the stories I wanted to discuss on our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
God, our states got beef with each other, which is fine. Florida should have beef with Washington State for many reasons. But the Florida AG is now suing both California and Washington over this issue with giving commercial driver's license to undocumented or illegal truck drivers.
Yeah. So basically, they are going to the Supreme Court. They're pushing past the lower courts and going straight to the Supreme Court with this. The lawsuit's arguing that federal laws should preempt any like local and state laws that allow places like California and Washington to not inquire about residency status when giving things like commercial driver's license to truck drivers who can't pass basic English tests.
Yeah, and I didn't know this, but it says, and this is according to U.S. Department of Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, he says that California is the only state in the nation that refuses to ensure big rig drivers can read our road signs and communicate with law enforcement, calling it a fundamental safety issue, which, yeah, that is a fundamental safety issue. But then there are also concerns about Washington and New Mexico and sort of their lax enforcement of English proficiency standards.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, and back to when you just got your driver's license as a kid to drive a regular car, you had to pass very basic English road sign tests, you know, and that's just, you're staying in your probably little hometown, driving to school. These people are crossing state lines. They're going all over America, and not being able to, you know, read basic road signs, it seems to be a pretty obvious issue that I can't believe we have to talk about in a lawsuit.
Yeah, and this obviously stemming from the fatal crash on the Florida Turnpike, and that driver had gotten CDLs from both Washington and California. So it says the lawsuit, you reference this a little bit, but contends that federal requirements preempt California and Washington laws that have prevented inquiring about the immigration status of people seeking commercial driver's license. And that's because, you know, we're sanctuary states. And so they really do treat, and Karen Bass said that this week, they treat illegals the same as citizens. And, you know, that's really for all intents and purposes. And so even in Washington state, and I don't think people realize this, like, if let's say a state patrol trooper pulls you over, there is nothing in front of them when they pull up your information that would tell them at all whether you're illegal or legal. And that's crazy, because the state has prohibited them from having that information because they think that they will abuse it. The lawsuit seeks injunctions ordering California and Washington and their agents to cease the issuance of commercial learner's permits and CDLs to applicants who are not United States citizens or lawful permanent residents. So we'll see what happens there. It just seems like a common sense one. I think initially I was like, oh, you can't require big rig drivers to speak English. And then I was like, wait, Brandy, that yes, you should. You should. It was a stupid opinion.
Maybe not as a like primary language, but I mean, I even know enough Spanish to get me through my job just to be better at my job. Mm-hmm. So like learning at least enough English in your field so that you can be safe and do business in an efficient way, it seems pretty obvious to me.
Yeah, 100%. All right, DeSantis says definitively, we are not competing in the pronoun Olympics. And this has to do with a teacher who continues to violate state law. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so it's a female elementary school teacher who is requiring her students and the faculty she works with to refer to her as MX, which I guess is pronounced mix instead of miss or misses, which goes against not only, again, the school board's policy, but also state law and parental rights that we've talked about for years and years and years in this state.
Oh, yeah. We've got some mixes in Washington. Mix Hamilton is one I remember. And it's like, you know, you're confusing the hell out of children, right? What are you doing, you weirdos? And there's this great quote. So the attorney general, and this is not the first such letter the attorney general has sent to a school district, sent a letter basically saying, you have to stop doing this. I'll let you read it because he's just funny. It's just funny.
So the first paragraph that I had read that I was like, I love this. It says, starting with the obvious, MX, apparently pronounced mix, is a made up term describing an individual who does not wish to identify her gender. As this fake appellation necessarily subscribes to a system of thought that casts doubt on the binomial nature of the sexes, MX is an ideology-laden term that seeks to make educational professionals and most damning children mouth support for nonsense. It goes on to say its usage is unfit for a Florida educational setting. Florida schools aren't affirmation labs for confused adults, and public school teachers may not co-opt students into their own sexual and biological confusions.
You just love it. Oh my gosh, why can we not have an attorney general like yours? Our attorney general would literally say the opposite in a letter. It's just crazy. So good for them. All right, let's end with this one. It's been a while since we talked about, you know, rogue wildlife in Florida. I love this because to me, it's interesting, but it's also an example of like free markets. And the government doesn't have to do everything. Sometimes allowing private enterprise to come up with a solution to a problem that the government would typically handle is the more cost-effective approach and just generally the more effective approach. So this has to do with hunting. I think they're mostly talking about the invasive pythons, right, in Florida?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, in Florida, it's mostly the pythons.
So we know, and we've done this a lot, that they send out these bounty hunters and they have competitions even to make it fun to go get these because they're really damaging to the environment and to native species in Florida. But now they've come up with a creative way through a fashion company to not have to have the taxpayers foot the bill for this hunting.
Yeah, so the Florida Fish and Wildlife has partnered up with this company called Inversa, which is a Miami-based luxury leather goods company. And right now, the state of Florida has $2 million allocated in the budget to help with this crisis we have with the invasive pythons in the Everglades. So they use that budget to pay these basically contracted snake hunters to hunt pythons throughout the year. But now that they've partnered with Inversa is upping the ante on the bounty by 60% per snake. Mm-hmm. So because of that, these bounty hunters are a little bit more excited to get out there, catch more snakes. They have literally reached a 2-year goal in just 3 months.
Yeah, which I love. And it's not that the state isn't spending any money on this. I don't want to act like the state has no investment as part of this. But when you say, okay, the taxpayers now aren't paying the bounty hunters, the fashion brand is, because they're going to use it. And I would also say to the kind of no fur, no killing animals. No, I mean, if you're going and plucking them out of the Amazon rainforest where they belong and murdering them to make boots or a bag, that's a different story, I think. But they need to be removed from Florida. They're damaging to the ecosystem. And so why not make a sweet pair of boots out of them? I like it.
I love it, too. And they're actually so beautiful. Yeah. You should show a few pictures of some of them. But I'm like, I might have to get my hands on some python boots.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, 2-year goal, 1.5 years ahead of schedule. I also like Ron DeSantis. I don't know who on his team comes up with these little slogans that he puts on the podium in front of every press conference. This one is Python Begone. just like, okay, I just love it. Man, I love it's Florida different. So much.
It's different every time. Their marketing and branding is just
on amazing. Point. Love yeah. it. All right, Miranda, good stuff today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
In a lawsuit between Florida and Washington, I hate to say it, cheering for Florida on this one. Florida. It's just common sense. I mean, you can't, it's just ridiculous. All right, coming up next, it is quite the conversation about our Daily Show poll. Very curious to hear what Nicole has to say about it as well. We'll have that coming up next. First, a lot happening globally, nationally, markets. If you're concerned about your retirement, I don't blame you. So get a second opinion, okay? You get second opinions on all sorts of stuff. All sorts of things. I got a second opinion on a picture frame the other day. I need to frame something. I went to two places. I got two opinions on the cost and the type of a picture frame. No. So why would you not get a... I could. He actually, you know, I think would have a good opinion on it. So why not get a second opinion? That made me sound really bougie, but like I didn't go anywhere fancy. I went to one local place and they said how much it was going to be. And I thought, I want to support local business, but that sounds like a lot. So then I went to, what is the...
like Michael's?
Yeah, is that the... Well, is Hobby Lobby.
Hobby Lobby.
The one that everybody is like, oh, conservative. I went there and they had a better price. So I was like, ah... Anyway, what am I talking about? So if I get a second opinion about a picture frame, you should get a second opinion about your retirement portfolio. Doesn't that make sense? With our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. Know Your Risk Podcast. Say, hey, Brandy told me you could take a look at my retirement portfolio and see if it sucks or not. And he'll be like, sure, happy to do that. Free risk assessment. He'll also share the basic fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the remainder of 2025, plus a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities, constantly looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. And don't forget to catch Zach and I every week on Swamp Watch, digging into the dirty dirt of government. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay, our daily subscriber show poll. This came to me. It's not about anything in particular, but I saw people on social media having this debate. And I thought, well, I want to have this debate on my show. So I asked, do you believe that President Donald Trump is the most consequential president in American history? You notice that I didn't say best. Consequential. So it can be taken in a lot of ways. You don't have to like President Trump to be able to weigh this. So yes, no, or too soon to say are the options I gave to subscribers on Patreon, Locals, or X. You can become a subscriber on any of those platforms and participate. So Nicole, do you believe President Donald Trump is the most consequential president in American history?
Well, I mean, there's other presidents that shaped what we are today. So I would say that's pretty consequential. However, I would say that modern times has made it a more influential position in more yep. like than it was back then. Because then you're shaping the government. They're called founding fathers for a reason. Yeah. They definitely created what we have now. However, due to modern times, he's able to do a lot more with what he has.
It's true.
And, you know, it's funny because I saw a post, you know, oh, Obama didn't, you know, put in a basketball court, but he didn't take down the East Wing or whatever. Yeah. But it's because he didn't have the money, or he would have. Yeah. And Trump also has this money, which makes him even more influential and even more consequential.
It is a good point that presidents can do so much more now. They have such more of a profound impact on the globe than they did back during those times. I think almost you have to like just set aside Washington and Abe. Washington and Lincoln, like maybe you just set them aside and then ask this question.
Oh, but if you say that, then absolutely.
What's really interesting is that depending on the platform, you guys have much different opinions. So on Patreon, it's split between yes or too soon to say. 46% on Patreon said yes, he's the most consequential president. 43% said he's too soon to say. Over on Locals, 44%. Is that called a plurality? I don't know what it's called. 44% say no. So very different. We often don't get that. Usually platforms are. I mean, we have way more subscribers on Patreon. Mm-hmm. So it's a bigger subscriber base. But I just thought that was interesting. Let's see. Bookworm. No, only because there's too much competition. Toby Richards, when I think consequential, I have a bias for leaders who unite people. I work for a Washington-based company who has a consequential leader who has united and transformed a global organization through purpose, belief, and understanding. I'm not there yet with Trump, and that's okay, Toby. We love you anyway. Sharon, he's enormously consequential, but no president will be more consequential than Washington, who defined what American presidents would be like and set the standard for civilian presidents who serve and step down rather than consolidating power and serving for decades. Bob, I am pleased with what he has accomplished, but time will tell where history will place him. Yeah, I think we have to get out of this soul-sucking Trump is a dictator phase, have a couple turnovers in generations of media, and then see if people can look at it fairly.
Some of the pushback, I think, has driven him to do more.
Yes.
I think it's given him this, I don't care what you think anymore, and I'm just going to be more effective.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think it doesn't even have to be effectiveness. Like, I can't find the comment in here, but people were talking about based on, you know, what he's done, like the people, the backlash to him almost is consequential in nature, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Let me see. Y says, maybe not the most consequential, but definitely up there. He has done a lot of good things that no one has given him credit for. Officer Lee Groinman, top five at least, opening the blinds on all the corruption in government and how the U.S. has been ripped off all these years. It pisses me off the establishment. It pisses off the establishment because their crap is being exposed. We love when crap is exposed. Let's see. Greg over on Locals. Other presidents such as Abe Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, even Teddy Roosevelt, and Ronald Reagan are far more influential and consequential than Mr. Trump, which is not to say that he is not very significant in our time. I fully support everything he's trying to do. Oh, gosh. Here's one. Kick JJ2. Right now, I would have to say Biden, based on all the horrific changes that came under his administration.
Yeah. They each have their own consequences.
Consequential. That's why I chose that word. Consequential may be good and it may be bad. Let's see. Some subscribers over on X, DJ, I would say yes. If things kept going the way they were during the last administration regarding just border policy alone, we'd be much worse off as a country, in my opinion. Yeah, I don't think we'd have a country much longer. Reagan, ooh, that's a tough one. I'd say Lincoln was more consequential, but Trump is definitely up there. Yeah, I think I'm in the time will tell category. Time shall tell. Really quick, before we get to viewer comments, I just have to point out the genius of that segment in Florida Report about what Florida's doing with the Burmese pythons. Mm-hmm. Is that not fascinating? And just such a, and I'll talk about the apparel here in a second, but that is such a free market solution. Why is the state, would we have taxpayers pay for these bounty hunters to go out and hunt snakes when there's a fashion company that will pay them to hunt the snakes so that they can use the snake skin?
Pay them for the snake.
Right. Yes. Well, right. They pay mm-hmm. them per snake they bring back.
Yeah.
Because is that not the best? And think of all the dumb environmental policies we have that the private sector could handle much better. This is, and I know you might say, so first of all, I have a thing about the snake thing. Shoes, yes. Clutch, no. I don't want to touch a dead snake on my hand all the time. Oh, absolutely
I'm actually okay
not.
With the clutch. I don't like the pants.
Yeah, anything that's against my body, because I'm scared of snakes, right? Like,
yeah, I don't like that.
But shoes, yeah, get on there. You can buy some beautiful snake skin boots. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm all for using the animal up. Like, so I'm all for hunting if you use the animal.
You want to eat the snake?
I want all of it used. Like, use the meat, use the skin. If you're going to kill an animal, use it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree.
But don't kill it for fashion.
Unpopular opinion, I'm also fine with the fur, too, as long as it was killed for something else. I agree. Exactly. Don't kill it for fashion. But in this case, they have to kill the Burmese pythons because they're bad for the ecosystem. Just love it. Love the free market.
Like, if you're killing a bear and going to eat the meat and then
make a little bear rug. Hi, little buddy. All right, we'll get to viewer comments coming up next. First, if you're trying to save some money, and who isn't trying to save some money these days, one of the smartest places that you can look for those savings is in your insurance. Because you might just think, well, this is just a fact of life. My insurance is what it is. But a lot of people are dealing with increases to their insurance premiums, especially for motor vehicles because of all the motor vehicle thefts and claims, and even business insurance. Man, we know that if you've been the victim of a crime, for instance, as a business owner, sometimes you might get dropped. We have heard from a lot of businesses getting dropped or their premiums go through the roof. Well, let Firstmark Insurance give it a try for you for free. So do the Firstmark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. And like so many Undivided viewers and listeners have found out, it is literally one of the easiest and best things you can do for your family and for your budget. And it also takes so much off your plate moving forward. I mean, when I did the Firstmark Challenge, it's like a half hour to an hour time commitment where you go over your current insurance with them, talk about your insurance needs, and then they go out, shop the market, come back with their recommendations. But the amount of time it saved me year after year, I think I've now been with the Firstmark family for 3 years. They're constantly checking in. How are things going? Anything changing in your life that we need to know about? Your renewals are coming up. We're going to go out. We're going to shop the market again just to make sure that, you know, we're not going to settle for just whatever they say the renewal is. We'll go out and we'll make sure that we can get the best price. So I highly recommend it. Set some time aside. Firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. And as always, tell them you heard about them on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz, and Nicole Thompson. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to some viewer comments. I love that you guys love Miranda being in the chat. I think Miranda is the celebrity of the chat. As you know, my sister does Florida Report, but she also manages our live chat and selects the comments that I shall read. So if you're mad your comment doesn't make it, either your comment sucked or it's Miranda's fault.
I'm so appreciative that she can be in there and like chatting with them.
Nicole used to have to do all of what she does over there and pull comments in the chat. So it's nice to, and I think it's better for the viewers too, to have more attention, have somebody in there chatting.
Interaction. It's good.
Yes, yes. It's very exciting. Miranda's going to be working for us full time in the new year. Full time dealing with social media and all that stuff. So she'll be around, well, not around, but she'll be around a lot. And that's thanks to our wonderful subscribers who continue to support our show, and we can continue to grow our team.
We entice her to move here.
Nah, I won't move here. She's
she
in Florida.
Probably get us to move there.
Crazy. Portland braces for impact. Matt says there's reasons the Democrats don't want to clean up their states. Power and control. Yep. Weisscastle. Mm-hmm. Denied by city and state. Shouldn't citizens be allowed to ask Trump for help? It was interesting because on Sundays with subscribers, we asked both of these business owners, do you want Trump to come in? And both of them weren't immediate yeses, but they basically said they shouldn't have to. You know, the city should deal with a situation in the streets, but they're not. And so there's a great sense of frustration that all of it is about Trump bad when the city's just failing at its core obligations. B. Larson, hi, buddy. When I hear people in Seattle or Portland saying how much better things are getting, it drives me nuts. We're not looking for better than last year. How about back to 1980 safety or even 2000s? Yeah, I'm in this, like, tit for tat with this business guy in Seattle is honestly, you know, it's fine. It's just pissing me off. But he's mad essentially that I keep saying that Seattle looks like shit or that Seattle tourism is in the toilet or whatever it is. And he was sending me some charts about, and I get it, you know, he's in the tourism business and there's a lot at stake, that things are actually improving. And that's fine, but improving from a bad place isn't great. You know what I mean? A really bad place isn't great. And even 15 years ago when I moved here, Seattle is a shell of what it once was. That's just the truth. And so I don't think watering it down for the sake of trying to, what, trick people into coming here? I don't think that that's like, because then they'll come here and they'll see it. So we should be honest about it, fix it, and then move forward from there.
If it's hidden behind the corner, it's still there.
It's still there. Yeah, still even if you sweep it away, like you're going to sweep it away for the soccer or whatever it's called, World Cup, it's still there. On voters getting two ballots, Kathleen Bros, we need to get back to voting in person with ID. Julie Kennedy, wondering what it could take for Brandi to believe the mail-in voting is a bad idea. Well, if in our state, 150 ballots had shown up on my doorstep in an Amazon shipment with rice and a toy lightsaber, that might have been
it. Was
that Maine, I think it was, where that happened?
I think that there, it does give this human error aspect.
Yes.
That is
concerning.
Concerning.
Because human error should be out of the equation.
It should be.
Yeah, I don't know. Let's see here. Ooh, my stomach is growling. Whoa, did you hear that? I'd be shocked if you didn't. All right. On Mayor Harrell's asinine plan with this grocery store. Little Miss J, Brandi, what's going to happen when the government store has shoplifters? Nothing as before? I'm curious. Yeah, they're not going to. Fred Meyer at least tried. You think the city's going to stop shoplifters? Absolutely not.
It's been done. It doesn't
disaster.
Work.
Disaster. And all the security will be paid for with your money, not a private company's money.
Of course. And to take the land by eminent domain, like screw somebody out of that land.
Yeah.
Ugh.
This is interesting. Diana Manning says, "This is my sister's store. She was complaining to me and I asked her if she voted for a Democrat." Oh. Crickets. You should connect us with your sister. John Thomas, "A mile is not a frickin' food desert." Yeah, a mile in a city setting is a lot. A mile in a city setting, if you're carless,
yeah,
is a lot. It is, and quite a ways.
That is an area where you have a lot of senior housing.
Yep.
So there's a lot of senior housing, a mm-hmm. lot of low-income housing. So all yeah. of those people who are kind of stuck in that area,
yeah.
I mean, you have to walk to go to a pharmacy, to go to, yeah. I mean, it's so funny because he says, oh, we need all these things like daycare, pharmacy. Other than Fred Meyer, what's a grocery store that provides all that?
Yeah.
They're literally the only ones that yep. I can think of.
And you
of.
Let them go under. And you let them go under.
You let that happen.
Just while I would, now, I don't want either of these things, but a solution that would be better than buying this for tens of millions of dollars, running it, you know, funding it with supplementing the money with taxpayer funds and all that is like, I'd literally rather taxpayers pay to foot the bill for the cost of Amazon delivery, like to people's homes. Because, I mean, I don't want either, but that would be less. To
it
say
would make more sense.
Right. Because, you know, you they still have to pay for their own food, but the Amazon delivery, the Amazon Fresh delivery, and they also have Amazon Pharmacy and all that, the delivery fee, it would be less for the city to cover the delivery fee for everyone in that neighborhood who needs it, rather than them embark on a failed plan to buy up property and do all this stuff. I don't want them to do either. But
actually, it's free, really, if you pay for the Prime subscription. So, maybe you pay for that Prime subscription for them.
Yeah. Greg Olakis, this is exactly what the socialists are trying to do. It will soon be handout lines for bread and water. This is Stalinism. Wake the F up, people. I agree. You guys' comments are good today.
They are.
They're really good today. They're good every day. Sorry. They're always great. On the Pentagon press
some days
rule.
Are questionable.
Old Sub Sailor, $20 super chat. Thank you. Leakers are a security threat and bad for good order and discipline. The media can't be trusted to make the right decision in safeguarding lives. It's about clicks and selling papers. There has to be guardrails. Moe Sterling, you shouldn't trust a press corps that is working in concert with the government. I agree. Necro Two Shoes, we have a right to know everything. We pay for the government and they work for us. I agree. Michael McGrath, I feel the same way. This was a step too far, although I suspect there are a lot of partisan leaks that have become a problem for the country, and this may have been a way to control that. And you think there won't be leaks to the conservative media as well? That's their job. They're going to try to get information. And then a couple super chats I want to fit in. Moon Goddess, regardless if you agree with her parents giving her money or not, being so judgmental and to say she can't do a job solely based on that isn't fair. I disagree, because mm-hmm. the issue is not that her parents give her money. The issue is that she presents herself as someone who knows the struggles of the working class. And I don't believe that so it's the lie, right? It's the hypocrisy of that. But I also think, I'm sorry, that there is an argument to be made. She's never really had a real job, just like Mamdani in New York. And so she hasn't had to deal with the earning a living, maintaining, like all the normal things and life lessons that come along with being gainfully employed, with having to buy things for yourself. I do believe that that is a hit on someone. Especially in Mamdani's case, where he wants to run a city with 8 million, is it a little more than that now? 8 million people with virtually no work experience.
There was
it's
a good
wild.
Comment by Cuomo that called him out on emergency management, having yes. never had any experience and any mm-hmm. sort of problem. But that was actually, Katie was asked about that as well.
Yeah.
And they said, what would you do in an emergency, like if we had an earthquake? And yeah. she said, I'd probably make some calls. That's what she said.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd probably make some calls. What if the phone lines went down because of the earthquake?
Yeah.
What are you doing then? Like, you need to know these things. Well, that was ridiculous.
And also her saying, I don't really know how much money my parents send me. It's very progressive. Money doesn't matter. Numbers. They're just numbers.
I feel like the IRS should be investigating.
I agree. And a Little Miss J super chat. Donation for Miranda Brandy and or Nicole's snakeskin hat or boots. Yes. Not a hat either. I don't want the snake on my head.
No.
Feet for sure. All right. Good comments per the usual. Thank you, Nicole. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I love this. So the CEO of Walmart, John Furner, was on with George Stephanopoulos of ABC News. And you could tell that Georgie really wanted the Walmart CEO to say something bad about Donald Trump, but it just didn't work.
Let's talk about Thanksgiving first. Food prices are up, especially turkey. So what are you doing to help customers keep the cost down?
Well, good morning, George. It's great to see you. We are really excited about what we have planned for this year at Thanksgiving, and I can't believe it's already that time of year. But this is a time of year when people are busy. They don't want to sacrifice quality, and we want to do all we can to help them celebrate the holiday any way they want, and we want to do it in a way that's very affordable with a lot of value. So I want to talk about a couple things with the Thanksgiving basket. You know, first, we started putting together this idea of having the entire basket easy to purchase, easy to assemble back in 2022. And this year, we will have the best prices on this basket we've had since the program started. We're down about 25% from last year, down about $14 for the basket, which puts us in a position where this basket is just under $4 a person when serving 10 people. So we have a great basket that has a mix of our great brands, like Butterball turkeys. Our turkey prices, George, are all the way back to what they were in 2019 at 97 cents a pound. So we're really excited about the progress. I was really impressed when the team brought me this. It was better than I expected. So we're looking forward to a great holiday season, and we want to help people celebrate any way they want and do it at a great Walmart price.
Ah, not quite. It went on and on from there. George kept going back to the well, trying to. And now look, is the CEO of Walmart going to come on and say, our Thanksgiving prices are really expensive, don't buy one of our bundles? No, he's going to try to twist it. But you're not going to take a loss on it either. And so for George saying things are expensive, he says, actually, turkey's at the lowest price it's been in years. So you got to love that. One late super chat that came in, John Thomas Brandy, they're called champagne socialists. Socialism is for the people, not the socialist. Andrew Wilco, love that. As I said, we will have an episode of Sundays with Subscribers, per the usual, on Sunday, talking to these Portland business owners who are just over it, who are absolutely livid at the characterization that their city is doing just fine. Why am I talking so fast today? Their city is not doing just fine, as they shall tell us. On Sundays with Subscribers, if you want to sign up to support our show, we would love that. Absolutely. You can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show for $5. We make it super easy. While you're there, shop our merch store, get yourself a tote, some bumper stickers, a hat, you name it. And that's really it. So subscribers, we will see you on Sunday. The rest of you, I guess I'll just have to settle for seeing you Monday at noon. Have a great weekend.